Yes.
All right. So I wanted to do it later in my presentation, but I think that, you know, I might as well do it now. I want to give a challenge to people, because obviously I'm going to talk about a subject where we're going to have to think different about how we view the world today, and how, you know, what's our relationship to the world, and what how to understand, actually how to affect the present situation of international politics. So, and concerning that question also of the sustainability of the environment, you know, and the sustainability of human race, human species. Well, I wanted to give you a challenge about, you know, how to actually, with that piece of paper, how to actually sustain these blocks that you have here. So, if anyone, you know, does anybody know how to do that? That's going to be like, we're going to have, you know, does anybody, have you done that before?
You want to try something?
Huh?
Can you move the jar?
No, you guys. No, you gotta keep it there. You gotta find a way. You know, you keep, that's the only thing you have, and you gotta put the block on it so that, you know, it doesn't fall.
All of them?
All of them. Now you can try. You know, I tried, and it doesn't really. Okay. Yeah, okay. also, yeah, I gotta precise that you can't just put them, pile them over here. I want the block everywhere on that surface.
You want a bridge?
Yeah. It's like, you know, little soldiers going on a bridge, and they got to be one after the other. You can't just pile them. Because I figured that could be, you know, a million people.
I don't know.
Oh, two left. All right. Magic. Well, then that's a good so far. Ben, il faut qu'on mette. Moi, ce que je voudrais, c'est avoir les blocs sur toute la longueur en fait du papier. Okay. Il va être soutenu par les deux pots.
Good strategy.
That's an invisible hand. That's the Adam Smith. Okay, Grégoire ou Amy ou n'importe qui peut essayer. Whoever wants to try something, you know.
I got a theory, but.
A theory. Well, that's your a good time to check if it's right.
Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah. We gotta test our theory. Can't just stay in your head.
And this is a possible thing to do.
Oh yeah, I've done it. I did it.
Can I manipulate the paper at all?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. If you want. Yeah. I mean, I just said that's the only that's all you have. You know, I won't give you scissors. I won't give you.
I think you're onto something there,
buddy. Let me try it out. Oh, no.
Aha.
With the George on top?
Oh, that's a different type of paper, though.
Oh. I don't know. Hey, you found the trick.
Yeah. I figured it
bends
the other way.
Obviously.
Hopefully, it won't bend.
Obviously. Yeah, okay. Oh, that's smart. That's good,
a
too.
Bit difficult, maybe a little bit stronger.
If you can find a way to keep it like that without using anything else, then. Your imagination or your creativity. That's.
Are you going to do it?
Yeah, it's not really a sustaining bridge, but...
It's between the two, and it's on the paper.
Well, you keep probably thinking about it, Luke. Keep working on it.
You said the doors have to be like... There you go.
Did
everybody get
those?
No, I said you can't move
the pot.
Oh, you can't?
You can't.
And all the blocks have to be there?
Oh, yeah, all the blocks. Yeah. I don't think Newton was the only one with the black magic there, Pascal.
I'm on to you.
Oh.
Well, you didn't find my chest yet.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing I said. Were you there? Mm-hmm. I said you can't pile them. I want a block on all the length of the paper.
Are you crazy?
No, I'm not. Well, but I would accept it because that's something I didn't think about in a sense. But I said I wanted like a line of, but that, yeah, pretty good. It's pretty close. It's very close to be what I
win
wanted.
The attribution.
Oh, yes.
Well, yeah, okay. I would accept that if you don't put my specification that I want them like on a line, I would accept that. But yeah, that's not quite what I wanted, but it's pretty close. I like that.
I want to try something.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Hey, Luc, ça serait comme le bon moment de prendre des photos.
La caméra.
Ouais.
Oh, yeah.
Si on le pisse, ça va le rendre plus fort. Hein.
Yeah, you are good.
You hey. Oh, what are you doing?
He's using technology.
Technology? I don't know that word.
You don't?
Come on. That's pretty good.
What?
What, you didn't know that?
Huh? What? A lot of certain theory.
Yeah. Yeah, the certain theory. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
So you just fold it. You folded it. That's it.
Yeah. That's good. I had another one, and I just remembered, like, you can't fold it more, and it's got to be stronger.
Yeah.
But that's fine. If it works like that, you know, that's cool.
You mean, like, crumple it up?
Or like not just, like, you know, you...
every time you fold it, it's going to be more reinforced?
Well, somewhat, yeah. Like, you take it, you fold it again.
All right.
Like that. Again, like that. That's it. that's a bit, you know,
tricky.
Yeah, well, that's you gotta you can't just, you know, take things for granted that you can't touch anything, and you just have to look at things. You just gotta observe it, and you'll find probably a way, a theory.
But you
in
can
your
respect
mind.
The paper. Save the paper.
Okay, Luke. Okay.
What a waste.
What a well, I don't know what we would have done with the paper anyway. But, so, that's the first thing.
The paper wouldn't have been doing anything.
Huh?
And the paper wouldn't have been doing anything if it wasn't for us.
Yeah. Wouldn't exist without us too. Yeah, but you didn't give the paper the choice for the job. It was
all right.
You could have taken the recycled paper at least.
I think it's recycled. I don't know. It comes from the dollar store. They recycle a lot of things like food, and they put in cans and such.
As long as there's plastic over it, they can sell a dollar. You can get a dollar for it.
Can you? All right. We'll start with the class. But yeah, so
since I wanted to do that somewhere else, I gotta figure out what's on my plan now. Well, basically, Jerry gave us a good briefing about what we are doing as a political organization, you know, working worldwide to get rid of what I would call these dark ages, this dark age faction, which is running a big show right now with people like Al Gore. So he mentioned, you know, a good deal about Al Gore and his roots, and I wanted to give you somewhat of an idea, because we're going to go through this question of economic development worldwide, and what we must do, what we must trigger in terms of leadership, and also which nations are would be able, and related to what Jerry said, like I'm going to talk about LaRouche's four nation plan, our strategy to bring us out of this financial collapse, financial crisis we're in right now. I wanted to give you an idea, because the four nations are United States, China, India, and Russia. I wanted to give you an idea of what's going on in India a bit, not necessarily on the bright side, but give you an idea of the social, the condition there. That's the paper which was in the EIR from December 8, 2006 by Ramtanu Maitra, a correspondent in India for EIR. The title of the paper was "Without Leadership, India Drifts Dangerously." So these nations are, like the four nations are not just the four most powerful nation in the world. That's not the characteristics that LaRouche was looking at when he thought, you know, India, China, Russia, and the United States could do something good for humanity. And I want to give you an idea of that, because they say that India is booming, you know, everything is going so great in India. GDP just went 6%, you know, in the recent period, and that's like fantastic. No other nation, you know, other than you can look at China, but no other nation has this rate. But people mentioning that are also missing a point where they don't get that an economy based on a services economy can't really last long if you're not able to provide
for your population to actually develop skills. Because people working in communication companies, all the companies going out from here to there, these people are not the majority of the population. Like, these companies are targeting like this range of population because they're educated, they don't have a big accent or whatever. I've heard like different things, like, you know, like if you work in that company and you're getting calls from this country, from, let's say, France or, you know, or United States or Canada, you know, they go and they look at people from Western India because they have a, you know, lesser accent, or they go at that different region where they have that kind of accent, and it looks more, sounds more like, you know, it could be your neighbor if you train them well to speak English. So that's kind of, you know, that's weird, but it's our economic system, right? it's weird. So, but he states in the article, Ramtanu Maitra states that the minimum income required as per the World Bank's earlier assessment to live above the poverty line for underdeveloped countries like India or China is about $1 per day or $30 per month. That means 1,410 rupees per month. But the Indian government's poverty line definition is earning less than 10 rupees per day, which translates to approximately 300 rupees, about $7 per month. That's like $22 less than what the World Bank, you know, and we know who's the head of the World Bank, you know, so, you know, I wouldn't say. But the question is, you know, you have a standard of living which is really low in countries like India and China for the majority of the population. So there's something which that nation can do, even though they have that state of an economy. There's things that they can do that LaRouche has pointed, but it just gives you an idea that, you know, why not Canada? What's the problem with Canada? You know, we have a good standard of living, we're well educated, we could save the world. No? Well, it's something about also the conception of the fight for sovereignty, which in Canada we didn't really we're not as far, to say the least. We're not at the same.
Oh.
I've been refuted. I've been refuted. Okay. See, we're not as far in science too. I'll keep on working on Kepler. But okay. Yeah. So I wanted. Yeah, that was maybe my introduction, but. So I put these two pictures there because that's what we're confronted with, and we're gonna go to this guy, Vladimir Putin, president of Russia right now, who's been giving a big speech, a rough speech at the Verkunde meeting it's called like that usually, the Verkunde meeting, which is in Germany. Was it in Berlin? Not sure, but in Munich. Yeah, that's right, in Munich. That's right. Okay, so he gave a pretty powerful speech. And the day after, in the news, people were talking about, okay, we're in a Cold War. It just began again,
friction between Russia and the United States, you know, or Putin lashed out on the United States, or, you know, threats of I don't know what. And people were completely crazy about that speech of Putin, which is, if you read it, you know, yeah, it's pretty clear on what he intends to do, or what he has in mind when he thinks about international cooperation. But he's not necessarily just bashing the United States, and that's why he doesn't identify it as Lynn. That's why I put, you know, the Queen and Prince Philip there. He's basically going at this, I wouldn't call it a principle, but or a degenerate idea of what we call globalization. That's a degenerate idea, which is being pushed right now by financial circles, what we call the Anglo-Dutch liberal system, basically a monetarist type of system, which comes from London, which comes from the city of London, from, you know, right now, also you have Wall Street, and, you know, you have different centers around the world, and their function basically is to destroy nation states by different strategy. We've talked about Felix Roat, and there's people like George Shultz, and the Bush administration obviously is working for that type of interest, destroying the United States right now by the type of policies they're implementing on their population. So they're not great patriots, but that's what Putin basically, that's what he did to the people who were there. People like, you know, Joe Lieberman was there, Robert Gates was there, and other John McCain was there, and he commented, you know, on Putin's speech too. Yeah. So many important figures right now of the United States were there. Representatives of the United States were there. So what he did basically is that he just basically punched them in the face, but with the real history of the United States, the real art of the United States, the soul, which if it's revived in the United States right now, like what we're pushing with what Lynn has been trying to do for a while, and what we're pushing for right now, to revive the FDR legacy in the United States and in the world. So what Putin did is that he quoted from the start. He didn't go into fancy things. He basically said, all right, I'm happy to be there. Now I'm gonna talk about serious things. So I'm you know, we're all, we know each other. I don't need to, you know, go into diplomatic talk, which is fun, but which is also, which doesn't mean much. So he just goes into quoting Franklin Roosevelt, and he quoted the Franklin Roosevelt fireside chat of September 3rd, 1939, which is pretty interesting because it's few days after the invasion of Poland by Hitler, by Germany at the time. So basically, what Roosevelt says is, well, you can read it. Says the security of each is the security of all. When peace has been broken anywhere, peace of all countries everywhere is in danger. So that's basically what Putin went to say at the Verkunde meeting, and he elaborated it pretty extensively. There was
I'm not sure if I have this book. I know. I'll maybe change a bit the format of my presentation. But. All right, so what Putin said was, you know, on this question of international development, international cooperation, what was pretty straightforward. And he went, that's more at the end, but he went on this question that, well, if we want to have real cooperation with people or real development with, you know, all around the world, well, we can't just do something on one side, you know, and do something else afterward. We can't like, you know, we can't be Greenpeace trying to save, you know, environment and, you know, be the greenies, save the environment, try to protect animals and kill a polar bear. You know, we can't be that. That's totally contradictory with what they say they are. So we can't just be the good Samaritan and give money to Africa so that they don't die of, you know, lack of water, lack of medicine, lack of infrastructure, lack of everything. We can't just do that and on the other side, you know, push for globalization and just basically put a cap on development in these countries. So what Putin said, maybe somebody can read it? Oh.
On double standards. And there is still one more important theme that directly affects global security. Today, many talk about the struggle against poverty. What is actually happening in this sphere? On the one hand, financial resources are allocated for programs to help the world's poorest countries, and at times, substantial financial resources. But to be honest, and many here also know this, linked with the development of that same donor country's companies. And on the other hand, developed countries simultaneously keep their agricultural subsidies and limit some countries' access to high-tech products. And let's say things as they are. One hand distributes charitable help, and the other hand not only preserves economic backwardness, but also reaps the profits thereof. The increasing social tension in depressed regions inevitably results in the growth of radicalism. Extremism feeds terrorism and local conflicts. And if this happens in, shall we say, a region such as the Middle East, where there is increasingly this sense that the world at large is unfair, then there's the risk of global destabilization. It is obvious that the world's leading countries should see this threat, and that they should therefore build a more democratic, fairer system of global economic relations, a system that would give everyone the chance and the possibility to develop.
It's pretty clear. So he states, you know, to be honest, and maybe here also know this, he's very explicit about, you know, I know you know this. I know we are doing that right now. That's the policy, but you can't. It's not fair. And on sovereignty, that's the end of his speech. Somebody else maybe wants to read it. Luke, you want to read it?
Yes.
Read it loud.
We very often. And personally, I very often hear appeals by our partners, including our European partners, to the effect that Russia should play an increasingly active role in world affairs. In connection with this, I would allow myself to make one small remark. It is hardly necessary to incite us to do so. Russia is a country with a history that spans more than 1,000 years and has practically always used the privilege to carry out an independent foreign policy. we're not going to change this tradition today. At the same time, we are well aware of how the world has changed, and we have a realistic sense of our own opportunities and potential. And of course, we would like to interact with responsible and independent partners with whom we could work together in constructing a fair and democratic world order that would ensure security and prosperity not only for a select few, but for all.
So, yeah.
These damn commies.
We'll erase that from the tape. But, so he started also the speech by warning about the fact that the United States have been stepping out of their border, and he says that you know, a unipolar world means also a world where you have only one center of decision, only one center for any directives like economic policies. So you have only one master, basically. So he starts by saying that, and it's interesting because LaRouche was also giving a conference or a speech at the Senacoro Hall of the Chamber of Deputies in Italy, in Rome, Italy, where he also mentioned that the real issue right now is, you know, you can go at different little issues, different side issues, but the real issue is that we're in a financial collapse, where, well, since the fall of the destruction of the Bretton Woods system in 1971-72 by people like George Shultz under the Nixon administration, well, the real threat is that physical economy has not been funded, infrastructure has not been developed around the world, which brings us back, in a sense, 30 years in the past. I mean, 30 years before the breaking of the Bretton Woods, you know, we're almost in the same situation as at the end of the Second World War, where they had to rebuild, you know, continents, basically. Had been completely destroyed by the war. We're almost at the same in the same position right now, because infrastructure is completely is depleted, is crumbling right now. So says, well, the real threat right now is globalization, because that's the policy which was pushed on us for the last 30 years. Was not always also called globalization in human history. It comes from way before. You know, it can be rooted to, you know, the Roman Empire, Babylonian Empire, because it's a way of thinking which has existed before. It's also a way of thinking which destroys civilizations and societies. So that's something which we have to confront right now and be serious about. Because if we do nothing about it, then, you know, we're basically running, we're doomed. So basically that's where, before he was talking about three nations which had really shaped history or had taken a way of leadership. He was talking about Russia, United States, and England. Great Britain, but now he sets forward this question of, well, we want to do something good, so we might, you know, put aside the British Empire, right? don't talk about them anymore. And we're gonna introduce China and India, because these guys are doing some good things right now. You know, you're talking about they want to in India and China. Well, India, China, and Russia, you know, have different type of development plans that they are trying to make you know, work right now. But the situation is not really a good situation for development of a trans continental development scheme. Obviously, when you have, you know, problems like what Dick Cheney wants to start in Iran and pushing for it with, you know, we could say asymmetrical measures or tactics. Now, Putin, I wanted to go back to Putin's speech, because it also mentioned
that we had to go with the UN Charter.
And that's interesting. I was just like trying to figure out, well, what's the UN Charter anyway? You know, because we talk a lot about the American Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and the principle there. But I was thinking, well, the UN Charter, okay, well, was crafted by people like, you know, Roosevelt wanted to start the United Nations, but not on the same way it is being run today. But Eleanor Roosevelt was also on the committee which crafted, you know, the first foundation of it. So I was thinking, well, you know, it's not so far from the United States, you know, principle. So I just went on, you know, the website and looked it up. So maybe somebody else wants to read that, and we'll see what we can do with this. Matt, or you read? You want to read? Bel canto.
With the peoples of the United Nations determined, we, the peoples of the United Nations, determined to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has brought untold sorrow to mankind, and to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women and of nations large and small, and to establish conditions under which justice and respect for the obligations arising from treaties and other sources of international law can be maintained, and to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom. And for these ends, to practice tolerance and live together in peace with one another as good neighbors, and to unite our strength to maintain international peace and security, and to ensure by the acceptance of principles and the institution of methods that armed force shall not be used, save in the common interest, and to employ international machinery for the promotion of the economic and social advancement of all people. Have resolved to combine our efforts to accomplish these aims. Accordingly, our respective governments, through representatives assembled in the city of San Francisco, who have exhibited their full powers found to be in good and due form, have agreed to the present charter of the United Nations and do hereby establish an international organization to be known as the United Nations.
Yeah. That's why that's interesting. But I was finding, well, that's interesting, you know. That's just after the Second World War. Obviously, there was no baby boomer at that conference. No baby boomers, you know, to just, like, bring up, you know, dignity of animals somewhere there. Like, you know. We should include the polar bears. There was none of that. But, you know, I just found it interesting to look at this, because imagine if, you know, even if it's the UN Charter, you know, if it's not a national type of, you know, a sovereign nation type of policy. It's something which is bigger than a nation, but I think that the ideas which are there are basically, you know, it's not like the law, but it's something which is a guide, a guideline for international affairs. Now, you know, who's respecting that today under globalization? You know, well, what's up with all this question of dignity of man, you know, reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, equal rights, women and men, for any nation, small or large. So it's like, well, you know, that would be great if that was, you know, used, if that was implemented. But obviously, the UN can't really do that. They can't really implement these things. So it has to come from nation states. Now, the way it's run right now, we won't have these kind of developments if we don't push for it. You know, these are projects that we've put forward. Just a bit light. you know, nuclear energy. That's the Angra Central, the plant of Angra in Brazil. Then the Wapa. The land bridge, well, agricultural, and the maglev train. These are things that we could have, like, you know, done, like big projects which were proposed at the time where the baby boomers were not in the conference, like the UN Charter or the, you know, 1950s, 60s, beginning, you know, of the 60s. Well, these things have been stopped because after FDR, the thrust for, you know, the energy to actually bring about these projects was not there, or was shut down by the other faction of people like Roatan and then, you know, these kind of fascists. It took over again, and now we're going to look at what, you know, what the planet would be according to Al Gore. Would be white, because
yeah.
That's the favorite color of Al Gore. And because there's no human beings on the map, it's just not there, and you would. I couldn't refrain but to put Kindred on it. Cause, you know,
is, so he, is he waving?
Huh?
Is he waving?
Well, if you're a human being trying to put human being, you know, type of behavior to an animal, that's what he does. Because that's what human beings are doing. Like, they're waving. But I don't know. He might be just scratching his nose. You don't really know. But, yeah, you can see it like that if you want. But basically, if Al Gore and his crowd take over, that's what we're going to see. We're gonna go back there. You know, we're not going to have these machines anymore. It's not working. We got to be in peaceful harmony with nature. So we got to go back with the beef. You know, just the beef. And windmills. We probably save what we have left of our industrial capacity to build windmills. So that's the other side of it. I wanted to go maybe a little bit on this question of, you know, financial crisis, which we see right now, and that's the you know, people are coming to our table sometimes and saying, well, but how do you reorganize the system? And LaRouche talks about credit, and he talks about Bretton Woods, and he talks about all these things, and how do you peg, you can't peg the dollar to gold, and or you can't, should we go to a gold standard, or to a gold reserve, or and people are sometimes very mixed up about what's going on and what we have to do, and they're trying to find the details about how, you know, we should send, you know, if we have, you know, during this conference where we're going to reestablish a financial system which works, you know, we should have a person who's going to be directing the section of, you know, this or that concerning the money emission and, you know, different policies. But they're missing the point that, you know, we're not even close to that right now. So they shouldn't worry about who's going to do, you know, the part on the emission of credit, because we're not there yet. You know, it's still a lot of work to do, but people also are trying to go too fast into trying to solve the problem by just taking some technicalities and trying to fix it up. You know, bring, you know, the system doesn't work, we're going to build a new system, but they're not getting out of their false axioms, which are the same things as this bridge that I asked you to build at the beginning. You know, they're not gonna move the paper, because that's how it was given to you. So, you know, these are the foundations of your system. So they are thinking about credit, but they still have this idea of, well, money is so important. You know, we have to find a way, how do we make the credit, and what's going to be, you know, the relationship between, you know, the dollar or whatever base we have, which maybe could be gold or silver or aluminum. We don't know. Yeah. These people are just asking these questions, and just seems really complex. It seems really like, okay, we got to think about all these things. Well, first of all, we got to understand what's going on right now, and that's, you know, there's no number, no number on that chart, but that's how LaRouche has explained the collapse in which we're in. He didn't try to, you know, put statistics together and say, well, you look at the number, we're really, really in deep shit. it's not about the numbers, you know. It's about what type of condition we are actually imposing on us. Because it's not that we are crashing like in 1929. LaRouche has been stating that the 1929 crash was in 1987. You know, get over it. We're not going to crash. The system is not going to crash like in 1929. It already did. We're past that. You know, it's worrying me what, like, Matt was asking me this morning. Who's that guy who talked about control disintegration?
Paul
Morgan. Yeah. So under people like Zbigniew Brzezinski and Paul Volcker, when he came in, what stated it directly that, you know, we were to disintegrate the economy or the industrial economy to replace it with, you know, some monetary theory which would fix everything, and but in a controlled way. We're not just gonna do it randomly. We're not that stupid. we're gonna control the disintegration of our lives, which sounds pretty better, you know. At least you have control over it, you know. But what is that kind of mentality? You know, what is that kind of species, or, you know, being which would disintegrate itself? That sounds weird. So, but that's what the baby boomers were induced to do in this financial system which we're living in right now, and which is crashing. So LaRouche, when he was at the Roman, the Senaco Hall and the Chamber of Deputies, in Italy basically said, well, okay, so globalization is the problem, because when the system of Bretton Woods was destroyed, then they brought some monetarist theory to try to fix it up, which never worked, and we had more crisis and all that. They tried to fix it with band-aids, and we had a crash in 1987. Now, what's going on around the world is directly influenced by this system, which is crashing. So people like Al Gore trying to make money out of the global warming hoax, which are pushing everywhere on the news, because he's a hedge fund manager, so he's making money out of carbon trade, carbon swaps, as we mentioned it. We have a good cartoon on that to explain really thoroughly what's going on in his bedroom. And so basically, yeah, look at it just there if you want to take a look. That's what Al Gore does.
Yeah, but he hasn't started making money out of the carbon swap yet, because it's not...
He's pushing for it.
It's not
yet done, but he's a hedge fund manager. He's making money out of hedge funds. Now, carbon trade, they're pushing to have it in Montreal. Yeah, when we were at...
One of them,
yeah, in Chicago, I think it's pretty big. They are trying to have like a massive one in Chicago, but in Montreal, I think it was David Suzuki or something, somebody else, was just saying like, you know, you're such a great place, you're such, you know, you're the greenies of Canada, and I'm not saying Canada is bad, but you're the best, and so he said that. Or it was the environment minister of Quebec, which was totally on, you know, we gotta have the carbon market in Montreal. And it's like, what the, what are you talking about? You know, talk to me about recycling if you want, but carbon market?
What he was saying at his...
We went to a conference once, and was there with all the greenie minister or wannabe minister of all the other parties. For the before the Quebec election, so they were there and they were debating about how much they would put money into environment and recycling and new bins or new big green bucket. But you know, the guy was just basically praising, you know, how we can make money and save the environment at the same time. Great, you know. So, but they're completely in a lunatic state of mind, because they reject reality, which is that the system is collapsing, and everything that they are pushing for basically is not their idea. Just they're conforming to the system, which is crashing, and these ideas are coming from people like Prince Philip, you know, people who run basically the British royalty assets, which are running basically raw materials company, the largest one in the world, and are trying to take over more and more of the land, you know, and basically divide North America into bio regions, so that we can put polar bears and maybe some black bears, but not too many. But everywhere on the continent, so that they can live free. But they are adapting to the system, which is crashing, and they are trying to basically build more bubbles. And that's kind of in this graph. So you have the red line, which is the physical economic, input output. That's basically your infrastructure. Or what's going to your infrastructure to maintain your roads, to maintain your, it's even education, it's even healthcare. That's what you need to sustain the population. Because with no population, well, you got no economy, man. That's basic fact, but that's what people tend to forget. And that's a major problem we have with the economists today, or so-called economists. And on the other side, well, you have financial aggregates, which are basically your stocks that you have on your
you know, derivatives, your everything that you have on the stock market, you know, going on, and the monetary aggregate, so the money which is basically printed or not even printed anymore, it's just fictitious money, which is just, you know, okay, well, put more zero at the end. You know, just put more zeros and just let it go in the system. People are gonna jump on it, and they're gonna play with it, and the system is gonna self-sustain itself. That's right. That's how it works. You didn't know. I mean, welcome to reality. that's the joke, you know. And you might as well laugh. You know, you don't want to cry about these things. Even if it's sad, it's sadly funny. But yeah, great.
So, the monetary aggregate is the money available to spend, or
yeah, it's basically, yeah, it's a kind of, it's a false false relationship that, yeah, they print money, or they, it's not really into printing today, but it's just like they're gonna, like I said, put zeros at the end. It's just, that's more money, because you don't use money really. You use your ATM card, or your credit card. So that's also fictitious credit. That's money that you don't own, you don't have with you. It's just they so generously lend it to you with 15% interest. If you don't, you know, if you're not quick enough to pay it, and obviously, you know, that's where they make their money. They know that you won't be able to pay because you just lost your job. We're working at GM. You just lost your job. You have a car. You have a house. You have a family. And now you gotta work for Burger King because that's what just opened in the town. So you gotta find, well, three jobs to compensate for the one you just lost. So obviously you're gonna have a hard time if you don't, you know, have a depression and decide to, you know, just to stop, or I don't know. There's it's a fact that also, like, that just brings me back to India. There's a lot of suicide going on with the farmers in India right now, because they don't really see the end of it. They don't really know what's going to happen. So they desperately need some leadership there. But it's also what happens here. But yeah, that's the question. You know, what do you do when you're in that situation? Saying that the system is basically crumbling down, and you know, just lost your job. Well, one thing is, you know, you could join the Rushi movement, but obviously not everybody knows about us, so we gotta mobilize a lot. But it's not that's a tangent. What I wanted to say really, you know, that so people realize that the system basically is completely ill and deadly ill. So that's why, you know, we have to bring forward a new system. And that's what LaRouche has been stating. You know, we have all these problems. We have to get rid of Dick Cheney, because obviously you don't want him as the president of the United States when George Bush has his mental breakdown. So we got to get rid of him. We got to stabilize the Middle East and bring some real development. So that's where, you know, in that intention of having a new kind of Bretton Woods agreement around sovereign nation states, that's where the leadership of the big four, which was stated, Russia, United States, India, and China, is really important. Because you have a population to sustain, and to you have to develop the world. You have to do something. And these guys are not just living to just to have a hard time on Earth, and then, you know, be released because they die. That's not a great way of looking at your life.
Could you just go back to the last picture?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
When the pink and the green line crosses together, there seems to have to.
Oh yeah.
What the yellow arrow means or wants to point out?
Yeah, well that's basically that's where you have a kind of a speeding effect on what's going on. The first one didn't have that crossing of the two lines.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't there in 1995, right? Yeah. But now, since the IT bubble, I think, or around that, just after it, LaRouche has been putting that new one where actually the two crosses, and that means that actually the monetary aggregates are going faster than the financial aggregates. So you have more money in the system. It's like that's why we put out all these reports about, well, you know, these bubbles are sustained by fictitious money. It doesn't exist. So when these bubbles are going to blow, you're going to have a hyperinflationary state of the economy where you have all this money, but all this money won't be worth anything. It will just, you know, be money. Like it, we compared it and we said it's going to be worse. But we're in the same position as Weimar Germany and the Republic of Weimar in Germany in 1923, where basically you had hyperinflation and people were not buying wood, you know, to warm, to eat their houses. They were just burning money because they were cheaper. So they had that that much money to you know, millions of dollars, or Reichsmark, or a Deutschmark at the time, couldn't buy, you know, you couldn't buy wood or food. That was just like useless. Money was useless. So that's what it means when.
Okay, well, it means that when the two lines crosses together, the physical economy starts to drop drastically.
Also, yeah, there's an effect on that. That's why LaRouche is, you know, pointing at these economists and saying these guys are screwed because they are in a Cartesian-like system where they don't get any dynamic between what's going on in the physical world in the reality and what they see on the computer screen. It's just not there. They can't get it. So, but he actually pointed out that when you have that type of relationship between financial aggregates and the monetary aggregates, well, you're going to have a plunge more and more of the physical economic input-output. It's basically your infrastructures. You're fine. That you're dedicating to basically the future.
Yeah, like for example, the trying to maintain a system like this.
Mm-hmm.
With the current financial mechanisms that are out there, require that what's being done to sustain this system is that the real physical economy is being looted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when the auto industry went bankrupt or they were downgraded to junk bond status,
mm-hmm.
People who they had large hedge funds that had put their stock in General Motors, their holdings were no longer worth anything. Many of them were not able to absorb the losses that they had to take when the stocks that they were invested in were downgraded to junk. And so what people began to do was, like for example, you have this guy named Kirk Kerkorian.
Mm-hmm.
What he ended up doing is he ended up buying up the junk bonds of General Motors.
Uh-huh. At a low price?
Yeah.
So the hedge fund lost a lot of money?
Yeah, right. what he came in to do is he bought up the junk bonds, and what he was able to do, because he was holding
the company.
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He came up and tried to buy up the what was left. Well, basically, he bought himself a position to decide how the company was going to be restructured.
Yeah.
But the restructuring policy was to shut plants down and liquidate the physical assets of the plants.
Okay, to sell like the machine tools and
mm-hmm.
the buildings.
Yeah, to create a quick flow of cash that can be turned over and put back into the financial system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so like okay, so let's say he bought like the junk stocks for $1,000. Then when he had for $5,000 of machine tools and buildings, we made money that way.
Yeah.
Do I understand properly that?
Well, it's a bit that. It's also this idea that your bonds, well, the stocks of the company are so low, right, that nobody wants to buy them. And I think that the trick is like, well, you're going to be taking over the company so that you basically sell everything. So you're making a lot of profit really quick. But the stocks are so low, you know. When you raise a stock from, you know, let's say like a couple dollars, like when you double it, you know, because I have the idea of Nortel when they crashed here, you know, like you had stocks which were like $50, $60. A stock. So basically, if your stock is like, you know, $2, you know, well, you can buy more. And also, if you're able to bring it to, let's say, $4, well, then it's twice, you know, you just double your what you had put in there. So if you sell everything, just make twice what you had put in there. So it's kind of, but you just, for that, you just looted the company. You just sold everything. So you're not producing anything. So that's not the intention, right? They're basically predators, financial predators.
Yeah. They didn't do it out of goodwill to try
mm-hmm.
to save the industry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because what was happening, this was really a threat to the whole system, because the way that hedge funds operate are through banks and bring their holdings and put it in, which are very large, they put it into a bank and they're able to take out loans against that, which are much larger than the money that they bring together. Because in order to set up a hedge fund, traditionally it was about several million dollars, for example, maybe $2 or $3 million to get in to the scheme, to get on the so-called round table, and it would be about a dozen people, with $2 million hard cash, who would come together, create an investment fund, take this money, put it into a bank, which they'd be able to take out against, and then use this larger, use th- these large loans that they would take from the banks to then dominate financial activity. But what happened was, though, when the hedge funds began to take losses, when the auto industry went bankrupt, the banks were being threatened with losing losing the what they had given to these hedge funds. They were on the verge of losing it. So what began to happen is the hedge funds began to merge together and buy each other out and buy each other's debt. And what they began to do was they needed a place for stability. So all the new area of investment became commodities. So all of the losses that were taken in the auto industry were absorbed by the mergers and acquisitions of the hedge funds. And then in order to sustain themselves, they had to find a secure place for their investments. What they began to do was put it into commodities, which is like zinc, copper,
okay,
minerals.
Primary resources.
Metals, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What this began to do was create a very steep increase in the prices of these commodities. So that's an example, because now you have what's left of a physical economic system worldwide that relies on the actual physical materials, not the contracts, and not the monetary assets of the commodities, but the physical commodities in order to maintain an economic system. The life,
the appearance of.
Well, the actual, the real, what's left of the actual real world economy needs these resources.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example, because now you have poorer nations that can't afford to buy metals, can't afford certain commodities which are just required on a general operational basis. So that's just one example. But yeah, what he's saying here with this thing is that now we're at a stage where, in order to sustain the financial system itself, if you're going to continue to try to perpetuate this, it's gotten to the point where it's become necessary to root from the real economy, and that's why the physical economy is collapsing at such a fast rate, because it's unsustainable, because the amount of financial obligations that are totally extreme
mm-hmm.
to support it.
Yeah. So that's, you know, these things, we need to know these things, because we can't just pull a solution without knowing what's the real situation, what's the state of the real economy. So that was the triple curve. And so we have the population right now, which is not, it is not being used, you know, in a way, in a real productive way. And that's what we have to think about. Like, how are we going to be able to mobilize the large amount of population which is there, which is starving? How do we mobilize these people to actually develop their creative capabilities in order to bring down, you know, a better living, a standard of living? And so that's basically our job. We have to mobilize the population. You know, first of all, we are exposing this the globalization and which the people like
know, the puppets of this financial oligarchy, which is basically driving this policy of looting of the nation states, and yeah, of the physical economy. So we are exposing them. Now we have to mobilize the young generation to actually take up the fight, because as Lynn said in the recent conference, what was in the LA speech that he gave, he said, well, and also the website, what's going on with our website denotes that intention that Lynn expressed, that basically is the 18 to 35 years old, you know, year range, age range, which is our focus, which we have to mobilize, and which we did mobilize pretty effectively for the last election, the midterm election in the United States. And Jerry was there, probably has good stories about that. But we can talk about that later. But we were pretty effective in exposing all these guys, like also the campus Gestapo of Lynn Cheney. And so, you know, we have an idea of what to do. Now we have to bring that back into the mind of people, and that's where all the work, like Jerry mentioned, the work that we do on Kepler, didn't seem quite clear for the guy, the baby boomer. he had some good question though.
Yeah,
that was good. But that's something which we said, we don't have a scientifically oriented population right now. And with lack of discoveries in the realm of physical science, in the realm of continuing the work of people like Riemann, Gauss, Leibniz, and Einstein, you know, if we don't do that, how can we possibly survive this financial, this physical disintegration of our economy? That's not going to happen. So we have to bring that leadership, and Lynn is focusing on United States, Russia, India, and China, and it's pretty interesting. I don't know if I... Yeah, I'm going to shorten a bit, but I guess it's already... But it's interesting to look at the dynamic, which is being, you know, like people like Putin, what he did at the Verkunde meeting, people were a bit stressed about what he did. But it's actually good to put some tension and to bring back the real, you know, the real fact that the United States or any country, any nation state, which is truly sovereign, you know, of its actions, is not just going to respond, you know, to a situation by looting its population. It's not gonna kill to try to survive in a doomed system. So that's what, you know, that's one thing that we have to look at. Knowing what's the enemy, knowing what globalization is doing, well, we can know basically what's the other solution. Because if we don't want to go back into the dark age, we might as well go back and looking at how Renaissance are being built. What are the principles behind the building of Renaissance? How did it happen? And so I won't go too much into that, but question is to look at these countries right now. Okay, so that's China, the population of China. You look at these countries, and there's a high population density, you know, on the coast. But you look right there, you know, there's nothing really. And some say, you know, well, yeah, but it's the desert; you can't do anything. Well, we know it's not true. We know that we can actually, like Jerry said,
we can use nuclear power to produce potable water. We can have bridges, you know, not that one, but we can have bridges who are gonna work. We can build the infrastructure to get people to actually use the land effectively and just let the desert take over, and it's gone. So we can bring actually the technology we have right now into saving, you know, the greens would be happy if they only knew what they can do with all the technology we have today. We could save a lot of species or whatever they want to do. But we could use the biosphere and actually enrich the biosphere all around there, which is, you know, there's nobody there, nobody there. Just, it's really insignificant in terms of development. It's not done. So, but imagine if we were able to link, you know, these countries together. They have the workforce, you know. They don't have necessarily the education yet, or the but they're getting it right now. They're trying, because obviously we gave up on our manufacturers, so they have to do our work right now. So they get something, even though it's not the best way to do it. You wouldn't impose it on yourself. Like thinking about, you know, here in America, we're not at that stage, but it's also, yeah, crazy. But they have to learn, but we could do it differently. You know, thinking about this relationship between nations, and that brings me to this idea that we have, you know, we had problems in the years before, but that has to be put aside. You know, like Putin said in his speech, you know, it's not the idea to go back in the Cold War. It's not about confrontation. He says, well, there's lots of things to do, and we're not just going to wait and you know, see if you give us the okay. You can do it. We're going to do it, because we need to do it. So you look at things which are happening right now, like between Russia and India, that, you know, that's very interesting, you know, building nuclear plants. And that's also a thing which Putin mentioned in his speech. He said, well, look, we have brought publicly the intention to have some centers to enrich you know, the fuel, the nuclear plant fuel, you know, uranium and all that, to basically make it so that other countries don't necessarily have to do it, but with cooperation with these countries, we would basically give them the fuel and you know, make sure we can stabilize the situation around, you know, all this question of weapons of mass destruction, which is pretty insane. But if you get economic development, like what Urush and also Putin stated it in his speech, well, what we need to go back to is the question of economic development, and that's going to solve a lot of problems, because that's when you have fanaticism, which is growing in different countries. When you don't allow people to basically have a decent life or way of living, well, that's where they get extreme. Because obviously everybody wants to live. But if you deny that right to people, well, then, you know, what happens? So that's the question of, you know, we need mutual development. And it's not every country which is right now empowered to do it. So we got to look at these big four. So these are things which just happened recently, and you have a more recent update, which we had yesterday, and it's on our website right now. So basically, that's what they want to do. You know, they were talking about that in January. They have. It's according to a contact that we have in India. There's plan. Not just to, you know, have cooperation, but actually to improve the technology that we have on nuclear capacity, nuclear plants, nuclear energy. So that would be like a super small, super small reactor with a thorium fueled breeder power reactor. I don't know. We'll have to work on knowing what these things are, but it's basically a big improvement, because you it's going to be something which is going to be self-sustaining. Basically, you just build it, it creates energy, I think it's for 30 years, and then you can bury it. It was designed so that you don't have, it's safe, you just have to bury it afterward, but there's nothing which can happen. Because basically it's in a way, you can read the slug about that. It's in the way it's being built. There's just no way to have a problem with it. So it's completely safe. And so yeah, I was talking about this question of cooperation and mutual development. That's sounds a bit like this question of the Treaty of Westphalia, which I don't know. Have you heard about that, the Treaty of Westphalia? It's something which Lynn brings up a lot, because it's basically the foundation of the modern nation states. There's a treaty which brought us really, like, you had the Renaissance and all that, but really, like, you know, modern nation state was not yet there. There was still a lot of conflicts between different, you know, dukes, barons, and other princes around Europe, because it was not nation state really. It was still feudal. How do you say that?
Like
kingdoms. Yeah, kingdoms. So basically, after the 30 Years' War, you had a treaty, and it was a long work. And I'm not going to go through this. We have classes on that. So I'm obviously not going to go through all of this, but it's a treaty which ended the 30 Years' War, and which basically, you know, brought the responsibility that, well, if you want to have peace, if you want to have development, well, you just can't do it, you know, by ignoring people around you. If there's a problem in the country, in your neighbor's house, well, you can't just ignore it. You gotta help them out. So that's basically a metaphor to say, well, when peace has been broken somewhere in the world, well, you know. Freedom or what's the quote? It is in danger everywhere, basically. That's what President Roosevelt was bringing up with this question of the Second World War starting. He said, well, he says in the speech, I was wishing, I'm still wishing that it's going to end soon. Now we gotta prepare, because we don't know what can happen. But that's basically because people decided not to agree. Also, at that point, the beginning of the Second World War, they decided not to help out nation states, and that's where extremism builds. That's where you get fascist dictatorship taking over. So we're in a situation right now which is pretty similar, even though the characters are different. We're in a situation where if we don't bring these principles up to date, and up to date, We are at the verge of a collapse of our civilization. Now, there, you know, like what we said is that there are some solutions and there's some good work being done. And if we can get these four countries, the United States, to go back to the founding principle of the Republic of the United States, if we can get back Russia, China, India, with all of the power that these nations represent. And it's not power just of, you know, the how many arms you have, because obviously there are many. But it's a power of, well, if you can actually bring something better to the population there, they can do massive projects, which are gonna resuscitate the world, basically. So that's one of the projects that we've been laying, for real economic development around the world, and these nations can do it. You know, nuclear energy, we're gonna need that to build that's a land bridge. That's not just link between countries for a train to go from one country to the other. It's also creation of cities, it's creation of power plants, it's irrigating, it's real development of the biosphere, using the power of the human mind, of the noosphere to shape what's going to happen in the future, to shape the environment in which we're living in. So that's one of the projects that exists. That's a more recent map which was put out. It's not like totally what we want. Ours is a bit bigger, but that's what the United Nations Economic and Social Commission for Asia and the Pacific, they basically, that's where we took this map, because they are talking about these kinds of projects. So what we have to do is basically stop the looming confrontation which could happen in the Middle East, and which would just disrupt this development of the nations of Eurasia and Europe and Africa, and bring these projects on the table and get people serious about that. So obviously I went a bit quick. That's it. The end.
That's the United Nations, and the United Nations program is developing that last thing you just said?
Yeah, it's that's in Mary Bergman, Eurasian Land Bridge Passes New Mile Post. That's in the November 24th. So it's, all these things, like I said, it's in jeopardy, because you never know what can happen. But these things are being discussed. And obviously people know that, the Eurasian Land Bridge is Larouche's idea. And he's been pushing for that for a while. We have the reports. So that's a smaller range project, but that's at least something which, is being discussed. And yeah, South Korea, which had some good projects also linked with China or Russia. I can't find it right now, but they're talking about some kind of development like that. If Russia, China, and India are working on, China and India are working about, space programs, landing a man on the moon,
yeah,
in 2020 or no, before that, no, I don't remember the date. But that the date
is not the most important, but it's the intention. You have an intention to progress. And that's what we need right now.
Well, they never did it before, right?
Huh?
What is the point of doing it again?
Oh, well, it's because, well, basically, you know, the question is, well, why?
Space travel?
Well, yeah, obviously, one day we're gonna have to move people from Earth, maybe. But the question is more about, well, developing that kind of science. It's like, well, you know, why looking at the stars? Why, you know, why Kepler? Why all these things? Or, you know, why having, you know, aircraft? Well, it's something which human beings can do. You know, why not? You know, we can actually discover universal principle acting around us, and we can actually, if we can master them, we can actually use that to do better things, to improve our living, to improve the status of the Earth. Otherwise, it would just be like Bruce Director said last weekend, you know, without human beings, without cognition, the Earth would not be much more than, you know, sex, violence, and who knows what. Yeah. It just would be highly and intellectually driven. So that you know, we're here and we can do these things. So why not? Yeah. We don't have really a map of what we have to do in the next 50 years. Some people have a map of what they want us not to do in 50 years. But that's not the same thing. So that's the challenge which is posed to us. Are we gonna just go back to dark age, like I said at the beginning, with these policies like globalization? Or are we gonna try to do something better for our population? Because we can do it. Right. That would be, yeah. I don't know. People want to add on that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot to make up for, keep in mind. Like, we haven't had the, going back to, sorry, just want to turn back to the moon there quickly, but we haven't been able to go to the moon in a very long time, and we still really can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what we were talking about before, how our infrastructure works, our current economic system really works and thrives off the fact that it has to destroy our physical economy. And it's like Clinton, when he was running for president, he had a lot of plans to develop like $90 billion in infrastructure projects, and that's really why he got elected, because he had this outlook of developing a lot of these big plans. And he got in, and essentially, I mean, you had a situation where Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, had to tell him, well, you know, it's all well and good that you made these promises, but, you know, our if you do any of this stuff, our economic system will, the infrastructure will collapse. It, like, the economic system won't work. It's not compatible with the future, or the physical. You can't build. And we've had a deep, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sounds weird, you know, like, but these guys are strange.
Yeah.
They're strange to reality. Strangers
yeah,
to reality.
Yeah. Putting a lot of money into something like that is not compatible with the speculative markets that we currently have. So.
Tell me.
Have a nice
night. Okay.
Thomas, le truc à lire. Ok, si tu peux te servir, on en a. Ah ah ah! Bon, ok. Pense-en autour de chez toi.
Hein?
Pense des pamphlets autour de chez toi. Est-ce que t'envoies ta main déjà?
Ouais, c'est
vrai. Ah, ok. Ouais, c'est vrai, plus tard.
Avec moi,
c'est
ça, je
parle. Ok. Bye bye. Farmers need our lit.
What's that?
Farmers need our lit.
Oh,
She's living in her farms.
Yeah.
Serel!
I was going to say in regards to the question about, you know, why those are limits. Because you're at a point right now where you can't go for them, and or any sort of project like this, you know, it's something you'd like to be able to do, but you don't kind of have to be able to do that. It's more kind of a thing, you know, it's in the journey more than the destination. Sort of in the process of trying to get there, you're going to have to raise and expand your capabilities. And so it's raising the capabilities and trying to achieve and trying to do that, you know, number of things.
Yeah.
It's something you can bring back here and you can have them.
Yeah, right, if you want.
Yeah, shuttles which exploded also. No, I did. They had the same shuttles, like, I don't know when they built these shuttles, but I wouldn't go in these shuttles. It's like, you know, when it's written blue bird in the shuttle, something wrong happened. Blue bird, you know. Like making. It's a long story.
It's making
space shuttle with old buses. Yeah. That's the
oh, that's what he called blue bird.
It's a joke by comedian or no a humorist of in Quebec, Yat Tremblay. Which was he had something about, he called that Air Zimbabwe. Basically the Zimbabwean aircraft company.